Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Welcome back. I mean, you were here yesterday, hopefully. But welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for joining us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, and a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thank you. We appreciate you listening. It is September 11th. That's a day that means a lot to a lot of people. I don't ignore that fact, and I'll maybe tell you a little bit about my personal story from this day 17 years ago. But for now, we're going to have some fun. We're going to do some football, and Dane and I are going to get into it. If you had heard the last show, I went on there to brag a little bit and have some fun with our boy Scott Engel. But Dane and I have a team together in a high-stakes league, and we crushed. We had the high score of the week, and it ended really on the sort of final play that ended the game for the Raiders, and that was the pick six by Marcus Peters. We do have the Rams defense, so a nice night for us, a good night for the Jets, and a good night for the Rams. I think the story of last night in particular, obviously, is Sam Darnold. He's the guy that I would have taken first overall. I think he showed some glimpses last night of why I would have done that. I'm not suggesting this is going to be the rest of his career, but I like the fact that he couldn't have had, I mean, it's really the maybe the worst first play in the history of an NFL quarterbacking career.
Apparently Brett Favre did the same thing, pick six on his first pass attempt in the NFL.
I just wonder if it was as bad as that. That was such a horrendous decision. And it doesn't surprise me that Favre had that, but it was such a horrendous decision that for him to shake it off and go back out there, I think it says a lot about him. And the Jets rolled. I mean, their defense looked good. They did a nice job of sharing the ball around to different players, but Sam Darnold, the big story, 16 of 21, 198 and two scores after the first play was an interception.
Yeah, I agree. And to be quite honest, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to make excuses for the kid, but is that really the smartest play call for the first play for this rookie, like a throwback screen across the entire field when you talk about how
it can't not have been it cannot have been the primary option.
No, he was. Did you see what the offensive linemen were doing? It was a throwback screen. That's what the play was.
Terrible call, then. Terrible.
You got to look at it. When you see the response, like look at the left tackle and the left guard. They are literally blocking for a throwback screen. I think that was the play call, but I digress. I'm trying to not put this on Sammy D, right? But what I saw out of Sam I Am was that he can convert from a boat. He can convert from a moat. He can convert them from a plane. He can convert them from a train. He can convert them here or there. He can convert them anywhere. I like Green Eggs and Sam. I do like them. Sam, I am. Mobility in the pocket, extending plays. I like what I see out of Darnold.
Yeah, looked really good. Obviously, he felt good. He seemed at ease. I think a big part of that is you could see their interaction on the sideline is McCown is up in his grill, and they are talking constantly, and he's coaching him there. I don't know if McCown has designs on being a coach. It wouldn't surprise me, but his hairdo is almost too fancy to be a coach, McCown's is. But you can tell he's in it. He understands his role. I think he's been accepting of that from the second that Darnold got drafted, and he's coaching him every step of the way. And obviously, it's good that McCown's in it. In the event that anything ever happened to Darnold, I think you can understand that McCown would be able to get in there and run the offense. I think on the Jets side, we'll continue down there before we go over to the dumpster fire side in Detroit. I'm feeling good about that Lions under, by the way. So on the rushing the ball, I think the one thing that I was – so I talked to Brian Costello from the New York Post probably – it's like 6 weeks ago now, maybe even longer. And this was like right as training camp opened, and he felt very good about Isaiah Crowell being the primary option there and maybe seeing the ball 200 times. So I appropriately reacted, and I've drafted Crowell in, I think, 3 of the 7 leagues. By the way, I went 6-1 this week. I understand it's a really good week for me, and they won't all be like that. So, but what we saw as training camp progressed, Dane, is that Powell got the start in the 3rd preseason game. They talked about him sharing it more. He's the longest tenured Jet at 8 years, so I think they really trust him. So coming into the game last night, I was very curious how that would play out, and it turns out they ended up splitting it. Powell touched the ball 13 times. Crowell doesn't catch any passes. He caught one pass, and he was targeted twice. And Crowell gets the ball 10 times. He obviously breaks this 62-yard touchdown run, a really crazy run, too, because he broke away from the defenders. I don't think people expect Crowell to put on that kind of afterburner, but he did. And he has a great day, 10 carries for 102 and the 2 scores. But in general, it looks like they're going to be splitting time here.
Yeah, I think you said it. I think, you know, and listen, Mike, I mean, most teams in the NFL have some level of timeshare in their backfield, right? Unless you're Dallas, unless you're Pittsburgh, unless you're Arizona, unless you're the Rams, you know, you have some level of timeshare. I think the Jets are no different. Bilal Powell is someone who, you know, is kind of this, he'll get what's blocked for you kind of guy, is a good all-around back. He can pass protect. He can be a little bit out of the backfield. But I was surprised with Crowell. Crowell, to me, had more juice, more speed, more burst than I was expecting. And I will say this, because I've seen a bunch of these Jets preseason games, including being at the first one against the Atlanta Falcons, your Super Bowl pick, Mike. They use Crowell lined up as a receiver sometimes during the preseason as well, like legitimately split out in the slot. And so I didn't see much of that. You said that Crowell didn't catch anything, but I am still intrigued. I think this is going to be a timeshare, but I wouldn't be surprised if it leans more towards Crowell as the season goes along. I think, you know, our guy Corey Parsons, the fantasy executive, says he always buys in last year's trash. Crowell underperformed last year, but that was with the Cleveland Browns. I think game flow and a better team is going to help Crowell. I think Crowell is a legitimate flex play moving forward.
Yeah, so on the wide receiver front, they spread the ball around a little bit, but Quincy Enunwa, I think you are encouraged by the fact that if you got Enunwa late in your drafts, you're encouraged. I can tell you that we'll do some waiver wire stuff in the next segment. He's going to be right near the top of the list. I think his 10 targets dwarfed everybody else on the team. Terrell Pryor and Neil Sterling were next with 3 targets apiece, but Enunwa goes 6 for 63, a really nice touchdown too, but he's got an early rapport with Darnold. Can't say that that's going to be the case week in, week out, but I think he's worth a waiver wire pickup, especially if you lost somebody this week, like a Doug Baldwin, or if you had an extra tight end and you lost Delanie Walker. I think Enunwa's a guy that you can look at.
Yeah, I like Quincy Enunwa as well. They made the point on the telecast, this idea that he's like a running back in a wide receiver's body. You saw him after the catch, you know, kind of with his touchdown grinding it out. And the other thing I'll say is, this is why you got to look at the games, Mike. You know, the Jets are running a lot of that, like where Sam Darnold will take the ball right out of the stomach of the running back and then boom, right over the middle as he draws the linebackers up. Yep, those RPOs. And when he's doing that, Enunwa is the hot read, okay? Enunwa is the guy that's running the slant over the middle. It's not going to be Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson is a slight man. And it looks like they want Terrell Pryor as more the big body kind of outside the numbers guy. And so I think Enunwa is going to eat over the middle of the field. I definitely think Enunwa is a target if you can get him in your league. I'm looking at, you know, I'm over on Yahoo right now, which I understand is kind of not necessarily the most, you know, competitive of leagues, shall we say. But in those formats, Quincy Enunwa owned in only 9% of leagues. So you can go out and get him right now. I know we'll talk other wide receivers' names, but Enunwa, Brandon Marshall are two that are at the top of my list.
Yeah, so, and Marshall obviously is going to be shaded a little bit too, because we don't know what Baldwin's status is, but it looks like he's going to miss some
all the time. Better.
So, Terrell Pryor, 3 for 49 there. The one thing I'll say is Darnold didn't go downfield much. So, if you're looking for any criticism, I think you saw that during the preseason, that they are managing it. They're not taking many downfield shots. However, When he did take one, silly throw and an even better catch to Robbie Anderson for a 41-yard touchdown. It's Anderson's only target of the night, but he cashes in with the 41-yard touchdown, goes over to the defender to grab it. So a really nice catch and throw there.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the thing, though. I'm going to be down on Robbie Anderson, though, okay? Because here's the thing. You mentioned it was his only target, and I do think they are priming Darnold to be this kind of game manager plus having the poise in the pocket, that sort of thing. I don't know how many shots like this they're going to take or how many they need to take. And that's the key, Blewett, right? I mean, they were up big in this game, so you have to think they'll see a different game flow moving forward. But I think this is going to be a lot of, you know, their backs out of the backfield, running the ball, guys like Inunua in the short and intermediate game. Robbie Anderson is that guy who will, you know, has great speed and take the top off the defense, but he may prove to be a better NFL receiver and a better receiver in the scheme for the Jets and what it opens up for the defense than he may get fantasy-wise. That would be a small concern for me because I don't know how much they're going to unleash Sam Darnold.
Yeah, we'll get to the Lions in a moment. It's Fantasy Factors, the only DFS site with exclusively single-entry contests. It's a fun and recreational place to play with smaller leagues and flatter prize pools. They have great free promos like Survivor, Super Bowl Squares, and March Madness Bracket Contests. So sign up today and go to FantasyFactor.com. That's FantasyFactor.com. Look, I think you want to bury the tape here if you're the Lions. However, Matt Stafford throws for 286 and a touchdown. Problem is, four picks to go with it. He got injured twice during the game. He had to leave one time. He probably should have left the other time, too. He probably should have just left the building.
Yeah, just wasn't his day.
at kickoff. It's the worst I've seen him play in a while. Not all his fault. The Jets D was in his grill a lot. The Lions offensive line, which I thought had undergone some improvement over the last couple of seasons, didn't look like it last night at all. As far as the skill players are concerned, nothing out of the running backs, which is what I expect for most of this season. Theo Riddick did carry the ball four times for 20 yards, and he did catch the ball five times for 15 yards. So you get 2, 3.5, plus 5. You get like an 8.5-point game out of Theo Riddick, which is about standard fare for him. You want him in that 10 to 15 range for most weeks, so slightly under it, but nonetheless, you get a little bit out of Riddick, nothing out of the other running backs. Kenny Golladay, 7 for 114, a relatively quiet 7 for 114 in my mind because that game was out of hand, a 31-point third quarter for the Jets. Golden Tate hooked me up, and I won a contest because of him last night. That touchdown was clutch, 7 for 79 and a touchdown when it was still a game. Marvin Jones, 4 for 54. He missed another one in the end zone. Not really his fault, but he could have brought it in. It would have been a tough play. So there you go. That's really it out of the Lions. I think it's just a dumpster fire, and there isn't much to say. I don't think that's necessarily indicative of who they'll be this year, but I have the Lions under 8, and I'm feeling good about it at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned for Matty Stafford's health. You're right. This offensive line was supposed to be, you know, above average, right? Like Decker they got. They drafted Ragnow. They signed another guy. They thought it was going to be okay. I will say this. I'm encouraged by Kenny Golladay. Kenny Golladay looks like a man amongst boys, especially when you have Golden Tate and Marvin Lewis who are smaller men. You know, Kenny Golladay looked to be that big old X receiver. I liked Kenny Golladay going 7 for 114. And I'm going to tell you this, Blewett. I have a little bit of a different take than you on these Detroit running backs. I'm encouraged by one of them, and it was Kerryon Johnson. Mike, I mean, their offense looked like it was more productive when Kerryon Johnson was in. He was able to break off, you know, like a 7 or 8 yard run right up the middle. He also had a nice one-handed grab out of the backfield. And here's the thing. What you can just throw away the film of this is because game flow got out of control for them. And so Theo Riddick was on the field for a lot in the second half.
Yeah,
but if you saw this, though, Mike, LeGarrette Blount got banged up. I think it's a knee injury, okay? And he was splitting that early down stuff with Kerryon Johnson. If LeGarrette Blount is banged up and has to miss any time or is kind of just like recedes into the background here, I think Kerryon Johnson is viable as a back in a game where the Lions have a different game flow. And I'm worried about Theo Riddick maybe sacrificing some passing opportunity as well, because Kerryon Johnson looked like he had some viability in the pass game, looked like the potential for a three down back. I was encouraged by, you know, the flash that I saw of Kerryon Johnson, and I just think they couldn't utilize him as much because of game flow in what could be a tighter game at San Francisco week two. I would be encouraged by Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, and we're going to have to keep taking a look at LeGarrette Blount, see what the extent of that injury is.
Yeah.
He got folded on top of himself, but I think it's a fair point. I just don't think they'll be able to run it efficiently no matter who's in there, but the fact that, and we'll take a look at snap counts and stuff tomorrow, so we'll see exactly what that might lead to, but it's fair to highlight that Kerryon Johnson maybe worth starting while Blount is out, so we'll see.
Looked like the best running back in a Detroit Lions uniform last night.
Yeah, I think he is, but I just don't like their running game at all, especially if they're sharing it at least on some level. So we'll move over to the Rams, Raiders. We'll take care of the Rams first and then go to the Raiders after the break. Goff, very efficient last night. He's 18 of 33 for 233 and two scores. You have Gurley for 23 touches for 147 and a touchdown, picking up where he left off. The wide receivers, the guy you should be most encouraged with is Brandon Cooks, because in his first game as a Ram, he sees 8 targets. It's third, technically, to Kupp and Woods, who both saw 9 targets. But it's worth noting that he had 2 big pass interference penalties as well, one of which led to an easy 3 points. The other one might have led to a scoring drive as well. But they're taking shots downfield with him. He's 5 of 87, the most catches and the most yards on the team last night. A couple of big plays there. Kupp, 5 for 52 and a score. They actually handed it off to Kupp a couple of times as well. Woods goes 3 of 37, and he actually got a handoff too. So they are running those little – they ran a little touch pass to Gurley for the touchdown. His touchdown is technically a receiving touchdown, but similar to Tyreek Hill on Sunday, yep, it was really basically a handoff right in front. It's just a forward miniature shovel pass, a tap pass, touch pass, whatever you want to call it. So they spread the ball nicely around to the receivers, and the Rams D – does what the Rams D does, a touchdown, a pick six for Marcus Peters to put the game away, and 3 interceptions overall. 2 of them were really bad by Carr, but that's the snapshot of the Rams.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway here for the Rams, I mean, you know about Todd Gurley, right? And to be honest, I think he had, an average game for himself, 20 for 108. And then, like you said, the little pop pass for the touchdown. But my biggest thing is, you know, Blewett, I've been talking about the fantasy herd and how the Rams wide receivers really represent this. You talk about Cooks, right? The 5 for 87 and how Woods only goes 3 for 37. But Woods had, you know, just as many targets, right? And who's to say, Blewett, that next week it won't be Woods that goes for 7 for 122, you know, and that Kupp won't get the touchdown, that sort of thing. I think that these wide receivers are going to be kind of all over the place every week, and it's going to be based on how defenses play them and prioritize them. And I think Goff is going to be able to go to whichever matchup. So this week, you know, Cooks winds up with what, like 13, 14 PPR points. Kupp winds up with like 16, 17. Woods winds up with only like 7. But there's no reason why next week Woods can't lead these wide receivers in scoring. That's why I call them a fantasy herd.
Yeah, I would say that in general, though, if these guys can see 8 targets a week, you're going to be in good shape. That's really the ultimate point. Touchdowns are going to get spread around, but I like the fact that this offense is high octane enough to support it. Mike and Dan will be back on FST after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on September 11th. We'll just keep going through some football. I know it's a hard day for a lot of people, so I'm mindful of that, believe me. I'll tell you a little bit about my story in the next segment. You'll understand where I'm coming from on this topic. So we'll try to have a little fun with football, and then Dana and I can talk a little bit about the day.
Sure.
We understand many of you will be going through some tougher times today and memorial services and things of that nature. So I want to be respectful of that. As we transition back to football, before we do that, I'll tell you about BetDSI. BetDSI is celebrating 20 years as the industry's biggest and safest betting site. They have great customer service and fast, easy payment of winnings. You can play virtually every sport at BetDSI with hundreds of wagering options, including live in-game wagering on all major sporting events where you can make your play at any time during the game. So use promo code FNTSY, and you can go to BetDSI, and they're offering up to a $1,000 bonus on that first deposit. So use promo code FNTSY and try BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com, promo code FNTSY. Head on over and start winning today. So one thing about Gurley, you said he had sort of an average day. I don't want to get in the – I think many times as fantasy a community – we get a little disappointed when the guy doesn't have an absolute monster day, but if he picks up 147 scrimmage yards every game, he's going to pick up 2,350 on the year, and that'll be an incredible year, especially if he scores 16 touchdowns.
With 16 touchdowns.
So I don't want to throw cold water on what was a really good Gurley performance. Yeah, is he going to throw up 45-point? Performances like he did through the playoffs last year, sure, but I don't want to throw cold water on it because he only scored a touchdown.
This could be, you're absolutely right. I digress. You're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, the guy then, you know, even if you just look at just his rushing, right? He ran for 108 yards. Like, that's a pace for, you know, 1,650 yards or something like that, even more.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're absolutely right. What I will say, though, is I would not be surprised if when all is said and done, when you look at his game log week to week, where this performance was like, you know, 55th, 60th percentile of his 16 games.
I don't doubt it, because the 23 touches could be a lot more than that. You know, the interesting thing about this is in the fourth quarter, this is a game. That's I know it's 33-13, but
It was 20-13 in the fourth quarter going into the fourth.
20-13, and the Raiders have the Raiders have the ball, and then you know, they put up a field goal and then another field goal, and then it's the pick six put it away. But the Raiders had a shot, and I'm telling you, Derek Carr threw the game away completely. He really did. He threw the game away with two terrible interceptions, and that's what we're here to talk about. 29 of 40 for 303 looks good on the surface, but three picks, and two of them were really bad, just really bad. By the way, Stafford's interceptions were – they were rookie-esque. It was the type of interceptions that you would have expected from Darnold, actually. Threw into coverage. Darren Lee picked off a pass. I think he picked off two last night.
He did pick off two.
Yeah, it was right into him both times. He made nice plays, but they were right
into
him.
That's what I was going to say. One of the Lee interceptions, and I believe Tremaine Johnson made a very athletic play as well. There were some that were good plays by Jet defenders, but, you know, he did throw it all over the lot.
So conversely, with Carr, or on the other foot with Carr, he just didn't have a good night. I'm not going to sit here and say that 29 of 40 for 303, and he looked good. Like the first half, he looked pretty good. But the second half, he didn't get it done. They got shut out. He threw two horrendous interceptions. They put the game away because of him. And I didn't draft Derek Carr anywhere. I'm not in love with him. I haven't been in love with him for the entirety of his career. I barely owned him in any fantasy drafts. I do think he has ability, but I think he's middle of the road guy, and I think they're hitched to a wagon that isn't going anywhere. And the fact that they traded Khalil Mack and kept him is a huge mistake. In my mind, they couldn't get rid of Carr, but I think this team is going to struggle this year. I've said that for a while, and I said that before they got rid of Khalil Mack, and now the under eight, I'm feeling pretty good about.
Yeah, as you know, if you listen to this show, if you listen to this network, I've been under on the Ravens, you know, since the season win totals came out. And here's the other thing I'll say as it relates to Carr. And I've said this before about guys like Ryan Tannehill. I've said it before with guys like Andy Dalton. You are in one of three positions if you are a team in the NFL. And the best is to A, know that you have your franchise quarterback who can take you to the promised land. That's the best situation to be in, right? And there's probably, oh, I don't know, 10 teams that are in that situation. Honestly, the next best situation is to be where you know that you do not have your franchise quarterback, or that, like, you know, you have your rookie that you hope is going to be that one, right? So to know that you don't have it and, like, you're in the market for one. The worst is to be where you're not sure or you think this guy might be the one. Because as you kick the can down the road, all you're doing is wasting years where the rest of your roster may be primed and you don't have that guy. I think the same thing about Miami and a couple of other places where it's almost like you're in a long-term relationship that you know is going to end in breakup, but you stay in it for 6 months to a year. And that could be where the Raiders are with Carr, although Gruden seems to love him, so that could be the other thing. But I'd rather be a team that knows they don't have their franchise quarterback as opposed to a guy that's going to spend the next 2 to 3 years figuring it out if that is the guy, because it's probably not.
Yeah. So continuing on from Carr, I think there'll be better days ahead for him, obviously, from a fantasy standpoint, but I don't expect him to be inside the top 12. I think he's outside the top 15. He could challenge for close to 12, but I think he's outside the top 15. The only upside is that if this defense continues to get beat up like this, and granted it was right against a good Rams offense, then maybe he's got the opportunity to throw 40 times every game. And they really aren't going to win doing that. But maybe he'll have some numbers because he's throwing the ball 40 times a game. On the running back side of things, look, they weren't trailing that much. So I don't want to say that the game script got away from them because, like we just said, it's 20-13. They have the ball in the fourth quarter. And yet Marshawn Lynch only touched the ball 13 times for 49 yards. He does score the touchdown. He has an average kind of day. I have him in a league, didn't play him. I don't know. It's going to be touch and go as to when you play Lynch. I think he can always be in the RB2 range with an occasional RB1, but they need to get him the ball more than 13 times if they're going to win some games.
Yeah, I agree. He's going to be touchdown dependent for the most part. He does get the touchdown today, which makes his day look a lot better. You know, even in PPR scoring, right? You're talking about, what, 5, 6, 7, 13. 13 points in PPR is certainly not bad, right? But in standard play, when he gets the touchdown, he's going to be fine. But I think that's what he's going to be. You make a good point. It's not like the game script got away from them, so they were throwing all the time. They were in this game. I think Marshawn Lynch in normal games will have a few more carries and a few more yards, but this is kind of a representative effort from Lynch, and the touchdown saved his performance.
Yeah, so huge dud out of the receivers there. I mean, I ducked Amari Cooper and Jordy Nelson all draft season. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of them. I'm feeling justified this morning. 3 for 23 for Jordy Nelson on 4 targets. Amari Cooper 1 for 9 on 3 targets. Just brutal. And if you drafted Amari Cooper, you're probably starting him last night, Dane, because he went high enough in drafts that it wasn't a guy that was your fourth receiver. He was drafted in the wide receiver 2 range all during my drafts.
Yeah, he's a wide receiver too. That's where he was drafted. And a lot of people, there was even some buzz. I remember our former colleague, Mike Florio, over there on NFL Now, he's talking about he's in on Amari Cooper this year, mostly going off the guy of like the wide receiver 1 for a John Gruden offense has always done relatively well. But here's the other thing. I'm not on Amari Cooper either. All right, Mike, but I got to say this. This is a perfect example of like overreaction theater. I'm getting people right now, should I drop Amari Cooper? Sorts of things. And that's not the case. You drafted him, to your point. You probably drafted him in like, what, the 4th round maybe of drafts? He is your wide receiver too. What are you going to do? You know, like, what are you going to do? Start Philip Dorsett over him? I don't think that's the case, right? So everyone needs to calm the F down for a second and see what happens as we play another couple of weeks. Yeah, another poo-poo outing from Amari Cooper, but you're going to run him out there next week as well.
You're never going to release him. You just might have him on the bench at points. I'll tell you, he was so bad early in the season that I benched him on that Thursday night game last year.
Yeah, so did I, and that's 11, when he went off.
Yeah, 11 for 210 and 2 yards. Scores. Yeah, so I get it. Like, you're going to be frustrated by it. It's why I didn't really want him again this year. It's not about his ability to me. It's about the way he's being utilized in the last year plus. So,
Mike, would you even, quick question, would you even, like to our point of people overreacting and stuff like this, in any universe, would you try to fleece an owner for Amari Cooper? Like, literally, like at some low end flex play that you have on your roster that you're not really in love with because you saw something and try and go get Amari Cooper?
If you're going to buy him, you could probably buy him at a depressed rate right
now. That's what I'm saying.
Who do they have next week? Do you know?
I think they play Monday night against the Seahawks.
I maybe give it one more shot to see if he has a bad game, and then he can really get it at a low price. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because like, people overreact, and Amari Cooper is still a wide receiver too, in my opinion. Obviously, the lead guy in this offense. This was a little bit of a different game, you know. I think there's value to go after Amari Cooper because his price will be so depressed.
Yeah, the targets were what was most concerning, but Jared Cook. I mean, if you had that
That's
guy in a DFS lineup,
if you
had the guy in a DFS lineup, God bless. And if you had him in your seasonal lineups, God bless. Because I would never recommend anybody to draft Jared Cook anywhere. I'm not a huge fan. I think he's a lot that his bark is bigger than his bite in most instances. Mm-hmm. But he goes 9 for 180 on 12 targets last night. A huge game for him. To the victors go the spoils. If you played him, I probably wouldn't have recommended it in most instances. Jalen Richard. Saw 11 targets as well, and you know Nelson and Cooper just didn't see it. The Rams have really good corners.
That's what I'm saying. This is the cornerback
Johnny Johnson,
fandom of the Rams,
who had a pick last night, and Marcus Peters. In fact, all three interceptions were miserable. I just remembered the Johnny Johnson throw in the end zone was badly underthrown. The other one was a floater, and then the pick six. So anyway,
but
that's
maybe
enough
you're
going to
see that teams facing the Rams, the teams that face the Rams, their tight ends and their backs. May have a better DFS kind of day because these wide receivers are going to be locked down by Talib and Peters.
Yeah, so let's go to the waiver wire stuff. I think many of you know by now, Delanie Walker is on season-ending IR with a dislocated ankle and an associated fracture. So you'll have to release him and be looking for tight ends or other flex plays. I think, look, if you're rostering one tight end, which many of you are, I think you're going to have to be taking a look at who to pick up. The Will Disley thing might have some legs for some of you, but I think Jared Cook is a more likely option right now. Eric Ebron could be an option for some of you, maybe even Ben Watson in some of you, you know, depending on 10-team leagues where there's not a lot of tight ends owned. I think those are the guys you're looking at. Jared Cook, perhaps George Kittle. But really, it's Cook, Ebron, Ben Watson are guys that could be out there.
Yeah, I said the same thing to Scott last hour. We talked about Cook. We talked about I do not believe in Disley. I think that's a one-year wonder. Do not waste your waiver wire priority on that. I really like George Kittle, if available in your leagues. Remember, we talked about Goodwin being knocked out, Garcon not having the best chemistry. I think George Kittle is a thing for San Francisco. You mentioned the other names, Ben Watson. I'll also throw out, though, you know, one guy that I know Scott was really high on. You mentioned Delanie Walker is gone. Greg Olsen might miss some time as well. Don't, you know, look at the kid Ian Thomas out of Carolina as well. He's a rookie. We talked about kind of rookie tight ends. But if Olsen's dealing with a serious injury, Ian Thomas may be someone completely off the radar that you can grab as well. Mike, as a Pittsburgh fan, is Vance McDonald on his way back?
It's a good question. I don't think that that is a long-term injury, but I'd want to track it this week. Since they didn't play him in week one, that made me way more concerned. But I think that might be a week-to-week thing. Jesse James saw 5 targets last week. I mean, if you're streaming tight ends, which you can do, then maybe James is a play for another week. But keep your eye on Vance McDonald and Jesse James. I think Jesse James becomes viable as a streaming tight end if Vance McDonald remains out. One guy that I have in a really deep league, it's the Scott Fishbowl League, where everybody owns 22 rosters. They roster 22 players. A guy that I picked up, and my tight end situation is a mess there. I started Cameron Brate. He came up with a 0. In fact, I think one of my other tight ends scored a 0 as well that was on the bench. But I drafted Jake Butt from the Denver Broncos. Jake Butt was an extremely high-profile tight end at Michigan, tore his ACL in his bowl game his senior year, dropped precipitously in the draft, and then sat out his entire rookie season. He's back now. He saw four targets, 2 for 29. I know it's really deep, and the other options that we've already stated are in front of him. I'm just saying, put a star next to that guy, put him on your watch list. It could be something. Because the talent is there.
Yeah, I think that's possible as well. Remember, it is skill and opportunity that we talk about, right? The skill is definitely there for Jake Butt. This is a guy who would have been an early round draft pick if he didn't get injured in Michigan's bowl game, as you mentioned. And listen, Denver has been looking for a tight end to work that middle of the field for a long time. I think that's an interesting call. He's someone, though, that I'm going to more like wait and see on.
Yeah, I'd even rather.
Yeah, for a safer kind of floor. I mean, if you're looking for that, Ben Watson to me represents a safer floor. You know he's got the chemistry with Drew Brees. You know they're going to be putting it up. I don't think it's an exciting thing, but to me, that's the safe floor. And if you want to try to get more of a guy who could pop, for me, it's Jared Cook or one of these young kids that are filling in for Walker and Olsen, Jonnu Smith or Ian Thomas.
Yeah, good call on Jonnu Smith as well. So that's it on the tight end front. Obviously, we're going to have to take a look at what the LeGarrette Blount news is. He got folded over on his knee. To Dane's point, Kerryon Johnson probably picks up the slack there. But if you have LeGarrette Blount and you're in a league where you needed to play him, we need to take a look at some other options. And Philip Lindsay from Denver was, I mean, he and Will Dissly happened to play in the same game, but they were really the two biggest surprises of the entire fantasy week. Dissly catches three balls for 105 and has the score, but Lindsay touched the ball a lot. He touched about the same as Royce Freeman, and he scores a nice touchdown. He was I can't ever remember mentioning him during preseason, so I'll put my hand up and say I didn't see it coming. In my dynasty league, he is picked up, so somebody was on it. It might have been the Royce Freeman owner, but nonetheless, Philip Lindsay becomes a viable option here at running back if you lose somebody like Blount or somebody else, like if Fournette can't play and you need somebody else, or you're cutting Delanie Walker and he was your second tight end, or you have a second tight end and you want to backfill it with a different flex play, Philip Lindsay is an option here.
Yeah, I think he's an option, and I think he's an option who, unlike, say, you mentioned like the Dissly and other ones that are just one-week options, I think this one has more legs. I can see a backfield timeshare where Royce Freeman is the early down guy, the big guy, and Lindsay is the PPR guy. If I'm a Devontae Booker owner right now, I'm very worried about how it played out in Denver.
We'll come back. We'll do a little bit more waiver wire stuff. It's Dane and Mike on FST.
Marcus Cato is a baseball-loving 20-year-old Californian. In May, he was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. Marcus now needs a bone marrow transplant from an unrelated donor to survive. The National Bone Marrow Registry is made up of only 7% African Americans, which means Marcus, who is biracial, faces a unique challenge to find a match. Text INVOLVE to 50555 to join DKMS in the fight to help Marcus and others get a second chance at life.
This September 11th, we're trying to distract you and talk football today, talk fantasy football before we close it out here in this final segment. We were talking waiver wires, and Dana and I are trying to figure out our own waiver wire during the break. I'm not going to divulge that because our competitors
are listening.
That's right. So So a couple other guys of note that we glossed over, we mentioned the tight end situation. I think at running back, you're looking at Philip Lindsay. TJ Yeldon is out there for both owners of Leonard Fournette and people that may need a little bit of juice at the running back position. I think TJ Yeldon becomes a guy that you need to keep an eye on. I think he'll always see a few touches per week. And if Fournette is out at all, he was wearing a sleeve yesterday on his leg. It's a wonky hamstring. He was wearing a sleeve and not limping, according to a report that I read. So it may be good news for this week. But nonetheless, if you have somebody that is imminently cuttable on your roster, I don't mind you picking up TJ Yeldon, even if you drop him by the end of the week. Just take a shot, position yourself so that you could be in position to take advantage of something. It's like when I drafted James Conner. I didn't know that Le'Veon Bell was going to hold out, but I was like, he might. and he might not play a full season. And now in week one, I look like a genius. I mean, I am, but I look like one now too.
Well, that's good. It's good to, you know, be able to back it up by just looking like a genius. When you talk about other running backs, Mike, there's two others I'll throw out. I'm looking at James White is still available in about 40% of leagues.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Hill, you know, went down. I know that Sony Michel is coming on back, but James White will be a piece of this offense. And to our point about, you know, the tight ends and backs for the Raiders last night, the Pats are facing Jacksonville. And that's secondary next week. So I wouldn't be surprised if it again is, you know, guys out of the backfield and Rob Gronkowski. The only other name I'll mention, or actually I'll ask you about.
By the way, one thing on the Pats, Dane, one thing on the Pats, Jeremy Hill's lost for the year. So it concentrates the touches a little bit more.
It does, right.
Especially if Michelle stays out.
Right, because then we're talking about Burkhead and White, right? I think, you know, Michelle may sit out another one, especially against Jacksonville. So this idea of Burkhead and White. The question I was going to ask you, does Austin Ekeler have standalone value regardless of Melvin Gordon?
It's a great question. I was just looking at his name. I do think he does. However, I will sit here and tell you, I can't tell you that you should play him every week, depending on the depth of your league. That's the problem. You'll have, hey, it's an Austin Ekeler game, like once a month. It's like James White. Like, he's going to have some value in four or five games. I just can't tell you when. Unfortunately, you just missed one if you don't have him now or didn't play him now. But I think there's a few guys out there. Ekeler, who in more competitive leagues, Ekeler was drafted every time, as was James Conner. I think there's other guys out there like Geronimo. I'm sorry, I'm just bouncing around to different positions, but Geronimo Allison, I think, could be out there in certain leagues. I drafted him really late in one league. You made a point earlier about Brandon Marshall because Brandon Marshall may see fantasy. Yeah, so Brandon Marshall may see more fantasy value because Doug Baldwin may be out for some time.
Yep.
So. Who else am I missing there? TJ Yeldon, we talked about. Brandon Marshall, Philip Lindsay, Quincy Enunwa. I think we see most of it. Now, at the quarterback position, if Mariota is your
starter. What about a guy like Dorsett at wide receiver?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Or do you think it's just like a 2-week thing? Because, you know, but Edelman's coming back, right? Edelman's going to be back. They're facing Jacksonville this week, you know, so I wouldn't want a Patriots, I wouldn't want a wide receiver facing Jacksonville, right? And then you just got weeks 3 and 4, and then Edelman is back. So I don't know that I'm making the investment there. I may save my fad budget, although I would say I think Dorsett is in for, you know, decent weeks, two of the next 3 weeks in this month.
But if you have Doug Baldwin and you're losing him, and you got to put in waiver wires. You need to put in a waiver wire on Enunwa, on Dorsett, and on Marshall. You can only get one of them, so rank them accordingly, however you like them. I think Dane's point is correct on Dorsett. I can't envision a time necessarily where Hogan, Edelman, Gronk, and James White are healthy, and Dorsett seeing a lot of targets.
Right.
I just don't see that being the case. Now, they always have a penchant for mixing things up, and maybe they found the key that unlocks Philip Dorsett's talent. But nonetheless, I think those are the guys that
I got one more for you at wideout. One more for you at wideout. He's only owned in about 20% of leagues. What about our guy Ted Ginn Jr.?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. He's the one that I missed as I'm going through my list here. So I think he's always going to have value. Again, sporadic, but they put up
– You could do worse if you need to suck him in. Yeah.
I agree. So, you know, just – we only got a few minutes left. I'm not going to bring people down, but I just want people to know that we're respectful of this day and everybody's memories of the people that were lost. So my story, and I'll get to Dane's in a minute, but I was living in Manhattan in the financial district, and I moved into building 65 Nassau Street. If you want to Google map that, you can. 65 Nassau Street, I moved in on September 8th, 2001. So that's 3 days before the tragedy befell us, and that is two blocks from the World Trade Center. So luckily, I was not there that morning. A person that I knew from high school was campaigning for city council, and the city council runoffs were that day. And I stayed at my parents' house in Queens so that I could be a little bit closer to campaign for him. So I was not in the area at the time of the attacks. I may very well have been on my way to work anyway. It was sort of a late day for me back then on Tuesday, so I may have been on the train or something when it happened. I was unlikely to be in that area. I find myself very lucky to have not been impacted in that way. But I, like many New Yorkers, I had to go to memorial services, and there's a famous story about the man in the red bandana. I knew Wells personally. I had worked with him at one point. We both attended Boston College. I knew him sort of through that and through a job that we had. So I know it's a really tough day for many of you out there. Trust me when I tell you that I lived two blocks from the site for 2 years. I stayed there from 2001 to September of 2003. So I saw a lot of it. And the memories aren't great, but I think it's important for people to understand that we're respectful of it. We're just trying to entertain you and maybe give you a little bit of insight as to what happened to me on that particular day. So, Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, I am a New Yorker, as most of you guys know and can tell from the accent. I am a New Yorker. I graduated at Syracuse, Mike, in 2002. So this was the very beginning of my senior year, where I was in Newhouse for broadcast journalism. You know, and my mom, who works downtown, I got a call from her at about 8:15, you know, and she said, you should turn on the TV for your broadcasting. A plane just flew into the World Trade Center, and I watched it. I remember then going to class. I remember being in a journalism class where they were literally discussing the ethics of, like, people jumping out of windows. Should you take the wide shot or the close-up of it? And I just walked out of the room. You know, I couldn't get in touch with a number of my friends and family. And, you know, everyone knew me up there at Syracuse as the New Yorker. So there was like a kind of pilgrimage to go ask Dane if he was okay. One of my uncles, Johnny Morales, is a Port Authority police, is a sergeant or lieutenant in the Port Authority police, ran into the second building with his entire crew. And as soon as he walked in or ran in, 15 seconds later, he found a woman who was on the floor with MS that couldn't move. He carried her out of the building. The entire rest of his squad ran up the stairs. And this was literally 30 seconds before the building collapsed. And my uncle Johnny Morales is the only living member of his entire squad. And you would think that that's great, but obviously it has messed him up mentally for a long time, because as the commanding officer, he truly believes he should have died that day, although he is a national hero. So I want to thank my uncle, Johnny Morales, all of the New York City police and fire and construction, and quite frankly, New Yorkers that completely pitched in. It is definitely a day we will never forget 17 years later.
Yeah, so our producer, Chris Bavona, chimed in. His friend's dad was Port Authority on that day. So, I mean, look, the memories are real.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The memories are real for New Yorkers and for people in D.C. Yeah. and Pennsylvania. So,
yeah. It happens and it touches us, Mike, in so many ways. People that were lost, people that were affected. But New Yorkers did come together. You know, and that is something that we always have to remember. I think we have to remember it even more in the society we live in today. I don't want to get on a soapbox where there is such rancor in our discourse. I think we have to remember that whether you are red or blue, city or rural, we are all Americans. And unfortunately, it is events like this that sometimes bring us all together. And so we honor those who are lost. You know, I work in education as well, and I deal with middle school kids who have never known this world in a society where they didn't have to take their shoes off at the airport, or they know nothing but what terrorism really is. And I'm reminded of the World Trade Center in 1993, for God's sakes, you know. And so, Mike, you know, one New Yorker to another, we will never forget this day. And so I'm glad that you decided to mention it today. And at the same time, it is the day that we look forward to week two of the football season as well. So, you know,
thank you.
You know, everybody, I went 4-2 in my leagues. We heard Scott went 5-5. You had a good week.
6-1.
But I would digress if we didn't mention it at the start of the day. We all have our stories. All our perspectives. I'm reminded, and I'm sure everyone knows where they were.
Yeah, I appreciate you picking me up on that one. I didn't. you know, I don't often get emotional about it, but sometimes when it is personalized through people that you knew, it catches you, especially on a day like today. So a little perspective from two New Yorkers that kind of lived through it. And I do count myself lucky, and I'm not nearly as impacted as many other people were. Sometimes you don't want to compare your suffering to others, and you don't. I just want to be respectful of everybody on that day and the memories of, you know, my friend Mike Brennan and Wells Crowther and many, many other people, your uncle John Morales for being a hero that day. So I'm sure it'll be talked about on this network throughout the day, throughout the morning. So we wanted to be respectful of that. And tomorrow, I promise, it'll be back with an entire hour of football. So we got you through your waiver wires. For those of you that lost the Saints in your survivor pool, join the club. Mm-hmm. I did that in our pool online.
And Scotty picked the Titans also. I've won our survivor pool. You picked the Saints and Scotty picked the Titans. We both went 2-1 against the spread last week, though. We both went 2-1 against the spread. Scotty went 1-2. So we got a game lead.
We'll reboot our survivor pool. I obviously, luckily, in the pool where there's money on the line, I picked the Ravens, so thankfully I'm still alive there. So thank you to those who served us and to those who were heroes that day on 9/11. Thank you very much. We'll be back with FST tomorrow.